Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Also, you can visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, the shows are actually archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Yes, and so now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about goal setting. You know, we talk about setting goals and reaching our successful outcome a lot, but the question really is, what are we setting? What kind of goals do we need to have, and how can we get there? How can we achieve them? Yeah, so let's talk about that this time. First of all, it has to be within our context, right? People are, okay, thank you all for being here. There's lots of participation, and we have lots of people. Thank you very much for being here, for participating. Yay, welcome. We're going to do it within our context, though, because I see some personal goals, and they are very good ones, and very valid, and very important, and they will probably make us better leaders, really. And we may save that for another show. We may do another show on goal setting for personal leadership. That's a good idea. Yeah, people are saying they'd like that. Good. But this time we're going to talk about setting goals within the context of the mediation, the alternative dispute resolution, the workshop, the seminar, whatever it is that we're doing. So we're going to talk about professional goals, which I suppose are leadership goals really too. And, well, we may morph into the personal ones. We'll see. Well, you know, I always say this show is unscripted, which it is. We go wherever you'd like us to go. We do the questions, and sometimes we go in a direction I didn't expect, which is good because it makes it more interesting. Yes. So, and it makes it for a better conversation, doesn't it? Yes. So thank you all for being here. So what kind of goals do we need, just as a general thought, when we're going to do one of our leadership events, a workshop, a seminar, turn to dispute resolution and negotiation, whatever it is that we're doing, that which creates a group that needs to get to a successful outcome that we're probably leading. Yeah, that we are leading. There we go. A lot of people, Zane and others, are saying that one of the main goals that you have to set right up front is a time frame for the process. A time frame for the process. Give us an idea. Have an idea, have a goal as to how long it should take. And that's a really good idea, especially up front, because we have to think about what kind of a time commitment is this? And how can we achieve our goal more efficiently? Because we don't want to have to do it forever. We want to be able to get it done, right? Whatever the goal is. Now, sometimes frequently, people go, you know, I'm a Rotarian too. I'm like, yay. You know that Rotary is an international organization, and I use them as an example a lot because I happen to be a Rotarian. And our motto is service above self. And one of the things we have, a lot of you are, hello, welcome. A lot of you are Rotarians, and a lot of you belong to other groups that are similar to Rotarians. Yeah. But I use as a goal sometimes, as an example, that sometimes goals have a time frame of forever until it's done, and sometimes goals have a set time frame. We have to get on the ballot for a vote for an election. And sometimes goals have a reasonable time frame that is maybe change a little bit as we get further in. We might go faster, or we might go a little bit slower because there's more to it than we thought. Mm-hmm. For example, for the rotary example that I was going to give, that was a forever one. Well, not really, but it took 20 years nearly. We're trying to eradicate polio, and we're almost there. And it's a big goal. I mean, think about that. Polio is a scourge all over the earth. In the United States, where I'm fortunate to be, we haven't had a polio case in a very long time because there's a vaccine, right? And the vaccine is a couple of drops on the tongue. It's not a shot. It's not an injection. And polio, but polio is very rampant in other parts of the world, and it's terrible. And so Rotary said, you know, we could go and help vaccinate people because it doesn't take medical skill, right? You just put a couple of drops on the tongue of a child. And if everybody was vaccinated, there'd be no polio. What a good thing, right? But it's a hell of a goal. And you have to have a lot of partners in it, right? You have to have people that boots on the ground in different countries. You have to part. It's expensive too. So that was a goal that took a really long time, but it was very specific, right? And it has. This is a very good point. Yes, people are saying that is not a forever goal because it has a specific end point, a time frame for the process. The end point is the last person on earth to have polio so that there are no more behind him or her. Right? That's the time frame until no one else is capable of getting polio because we've eradicated it. It doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, but it has, it was a specific goal, a huge one, but it had buy-in. It had people all over the world that went, you know, that seems good. And it had an end point when it's done, which is a complicated end point. But we're almost there. You know, occasionally pockets spring up, and as long as there's one person on the earth that can possibly spread polio, which is very, very contagious, you haven't quite gotten it yet. But we're getting there. We're down to like 15 cases a year someplace. Well, we're getting close. It takes a lot of concerted effort amongst people. You know, it's a very good example of everything that we teach at Recipe for Peace now. And I use it as an example a lot because it really is. Look at the goal. It is huge. I'm certain that a lot of people, because I wasn't a Rotarian then, thought it was unreasonable and unattainable, and they said so. Mm-hmm. And somebody had to persevere and say, this is what we're going to try. We're a big organization. We've got boots on the ground everywhere. This is what we're going to try. This is our goal. Specific, it's expensive. You've got to get the little bottles of vaccine, and you've got to transport them, and you've got to come. It's a logistical nightmare. You've got to come with people with the vaccine, with the little bottles, that to administer it. Wow, that's a biggie. Mm-hmm. Along the way, there were some setbacks. When we first started out and you go into climates that are very, very hot, right? And some of them are very, very cold, come to think of it. And the vaccine, the little bottles of vaccine, went bad. I mean, they got overheated. And so the vaccine makers to sell tons of vaccine, and also Rotary put in some money for this too, they invented a packaging with, I don't know actually what it's called. It has a little a little temperature. Thank you. It's a gauge. It has a little tip. A lot of you have seen it. Yay! It has a temperature gauge on it that shows if the vaccine is going bad and you have to get it into a cooler place. Isn't that wonderful? Wow. Something was invented so that we could go all over the world and help people. Yay, team. But think about that. Think about the teamwork. Think about the logistics. Think about how many people had to work on it. And think about, yes, how many people had to get along. They had to see that as a good goal, and they had to get along for that specific purpose, for that specific reason, and get people to come. They had to disseminate the information when people were coming with the vaccine, right? No internet, still not a lot of internet in those places. You had to disseminate the information so that people would line up. And you had to deal with all kinds of different kinds of people and governments who, at least originally, weren't quite sure that they wanted it. Because, you know, unusual governments don't like social workers, essentially speaking, to poke their nose into their business, right? Yes, it's a good point, and we won't get into the political dalliances of today. But there, even today, when Rotary is well known all over the world, and people all over the world have seen the benefits of the polio vaccine, their children don't get polio. What an idea. They don't become crippled for life. Polio is terrible. Not only is polio terrible, it is visual. You know you've got it because you become crippled. And it strikes at mainly youngish people. I think, you can get it as an adult too, but it really hits children. Mm-hmm. And so people understood that when they went and they got those few drops, that means that they didn't get polio anymore and their children were safe, right? Because we put the drops into baby mouths, lots. So let's think about that. That's a good thing, right? There's certain pockets of influence in certain areas. Mm-hmm. And this is not a political show, so we don't really get all, excited about politics because we know how to handle people. But there were certain pockets, and some of you live near them, I see, where the powers that are in charge, for reasons of keeping their own agenda, discourage people from getting the vaccine to this day. Mm-hmm. They don't care if they get polio. Good. Makes you more amenable to doing my bidding if you have no choices and you're a cripple. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but it's a wonderful example of negotiation among all kinds of people, of teamwork, negotiation of duty. And we are getting back to what we said about the time frame for the process. What a wonderful time frame. We'll work until it's done. You see, the process doesn't have to have a set time. Sometimes it does because of what you're doing, because of something that needs to be gotten onto a ballot or something that has a time, an expiration time. But sometimes it's until it gets done. Mm-hmm. And sometimes things take a while. Mm-hmm. But the key is what? Thank you. A lot of you, thank you. I think a lot of you have been listening. Yes. The key is to understand that you're moving forward, to celebrate the successes. Polio was eradicated country by country, essentially speaking. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, we did the little easier ones first. I don't suppose none of them were easy. But some places have an awful lot of different kinds of government, an awful lot of polio, and an awful lot of terrain and very poor infrastructure. So we did it country by country, and as we eradicated, it was another celebration, another pushpin on the map, so to speak. Yeah, the world's a big place. So a time frame for the process. Mm-hmm. And what are the kind of goals do we have that we need to think about just up front? You know what? I'm going to call the next set that we're going to talk about, because a lot of people are saying very similar things, which is very good because it means that we're all on the same page. I'm going to call this a mission statement. Now, those of you who've been here before know that I'm not necessarily tremendously enamored of making a written mission statement if it will bog us down and we don't really need it. What do we mean we don't really need it? Well, the group is in agreement. The participants are in agreement. If the participants are in agreement and the goal is clear, it is very specific, put something on the ballot, it's to our advantage. I don't know that you need to write down a mission statement. But if something is bigger and unclear and you need to take like a survey, take the temperature of the group, so to speak, to see what people think and why they're there, which is an interesting thing. You know, we always say at Recipe for Peace Now that a lot of times, and it's really true, this is a truth from experience, a lot of times people have the same outcome that they want, the same goal, but the reason that they want it is different, right? Yeah. I could think of two reasons that are very different that are oftentimes in the room. An economic reason. People are saying, well, how can that be? An economic reason. It affects my business, my pocketbook. And a social reason. I have no direct benefit or not benefit or harm from what's going on, but I think that it's wrong, and I want to set it right. That's a social reason, right? As opposed to an economic reason. Now, the economic reason might also have social reasons to it. I mean, it might be a very fine person. You just happen to be in a business that is being affected. But those are two basically different reasons to want to achieve the same outcome, the same goal. Mm-hmm. So then you might need a mission statement to see where we stand and what we want to do. Because we're not, we may not have a specific goal set. Mm-hmm. Misha and others are saying that a preliminary mission statement make a preliminary mission statement for the first steps and then revisit it. Yeah, mission statements are not written in stone, right? A preliminary mission statement for the first steps and then revisit. For the first meeting, you might say, you know, why are we here? What's our goal? Mm-hmm. And why? So that we get an idea, which will form a mission statement. To me, mission statement implies being written because you worked on it and you thought about it together and created it together. I see a lot of you are saying you think that it means written, but it's not. It doesn't have to be. It can be a goal of the group. Mm-hmm. It would have to be fairly simply stated, I think. But yeah, whatever works is the rule of Recipe for Peace Now. And I'm going to say what I usually say. I say it depends. I know you guys say that, I say that a lot. But it depends on your group. Depends on whether or not you need to take time to really write it down and put it on the wall that this is our mission statement, this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Some groups need that. Depends on the size of the group. A lot of people are saying, Francis and others, that the bigger the group, the more need for a actual written mission statement that people kind of vote on, that people buy into. It's not an invalid thought. I think the consensus of the group as to what we're doing is the most important. You can have a gigantic group and not have to actually write down a mission statement because you all know what the mission is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think polio is written down. I mean, we have a mission statement. Rotary has a mission statement for the group. It's service above self. that's kind of general but kind of specific too. It means that we help other people, right? Service above self. I do not know. I suppose the mission statement, let's see, Rotary is more than 100 years old as an organization. And I think that that mission was written down fairly early. It was, yeah, that's true too. A lot of people who are Rotarians or familiar with Rotarians are pointing out that their mission statement is more complicated than that. There's a four-way test. But it's really service above self is the mission statement. The four-way test is a personal creed. And now you've got me. People are saying, what's the four-way test? And now I got to think about it. It's a personal creed. Is it true? It goes like this. Is it true? Is it beneficial to all concerned? I can't do the four-way test at the moment. You guys, thank you. None of you can do it either. Thank goodness. It is a test about personal dealings, about truth and honesty and goodwill and not committing any fraud or deception on anyone else, to deal honestly and transparently with your fellow person. Not just while the Rotarians, but your fellow person. But service above self is the mission statement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have a preliminary mission statement. It's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Gabriel and others are saying that you reach consensus before the mission statement and that the mission statement is the goal, but consensus is how you get to it. So consensus is the first goal. I think that's a valid point. Consensus is always the goal because we have to decide that that's where we're going, essentially speaking. Because if we don't decide that, then we won't be able to go forward. You have to know where you're going before you get there, right? You have to set the goal, and consensus is how you set the goal. And the mission statement kind of puts the goal down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Arshi and others are saying that you need research to form the mission statement. So before the consensus and before the mission statement, you need to research the possibilities so that we can reach consensus on what we're going to do, what our goal is, and then think about a mission statement to decide how to attack it. Mm-hmm. To solidify the goal, to make it so we all know where we're going and what we're doing. Yeah. So research first, can we say that? Yeah. And from the research, we reach a consensus. And then through that consensus, we decide upon the mission, on the goal. Mm-hmm. So we've got a lot of questions, and thank you very much for being here. And basically they're asking, how do we acquire the necessary knowledge to research and create consensus for the mission? It's nice to say, let's do this, but how do we do this? And you know, how to is always the question with Recipe for Peace Now, because I like theory as well as the next person, but we're not theoretical, we're practical people. Mm-hmm. So how do we research this? How do we acquire the knowledge? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dorcas says that it's through delegation of duty. Leader delegation of duty to create research teams. Mm-hmm. A lot of you are talking about dividing into subcommittees, which are really teams, right? With a delegation of duty is a good point because the team needs an assignment. And we've talked about assignments and how to give them. And the key to an assignment is really clarity. Mm-hmm. When you're asked to do something, you need to know what it is that you're expected to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not just kind of say yeah, okay, no, say no problem. Yeah, people are going, yeah, don't just say no problem. So you need to have a delegation of duty for the teams to do the research, but the teams need to be clear on what they're doing. And that goes to your leadership skills, right? Because you need clarity, but you think you have had clarity. You've assigned somebody, as a team, a task, and you know what it is they're supposed to do. The problem is that they're having some trouble doing it because they haven't understood exactly what it was that they're supposed to do. Achie! This means that you must ask them for questions, and you must listen and answer. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you know what? Sometimes this is a very good point being made for Caitlin and others. Sometimes when the questions are asked, you don't know because you hadn't thought about it from that direction. I have that all the time. It's like, oh, my, that's a good point. Didn't think about that when we talked about go out and find something for us. Gee, that's interesting. Oops. Yeah, you need to clarify. And if you don't know, you need to ask the group. You need to ask somebody who does know what exactly it is that we want the team to come back with. What's the question that they are to answer? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really the key to it. What's the question that they are to answer is the key to knowing this. I don't know. Let's think about that. What's the question? Well, the question needs to be clear and specific. Yeah. Not just go out and find us something. No, what are we looking for? Yeah. You see people lead like that, and it never works. Mm-hmm. Caitlin, others are saying that you need to be able to have democratic discussions and decisions too, right? Democratic in the sense of everybody gets to talk about it. And we might even, and I do this with frequency, take a vote. Mm-hmm. If we're getting off on a tangent, right, sometimes things kind of go off the road and into the woods. Do you understand what I mean? We're not focusing well. It's the leader's job to come and get us back on track. And a vote will often do that with the democratic process because it ends that discussion and moves us forward. People are asking how to do that. Oftentimes use a show of hands for a vote. Mm-hmm. If you can't because you've got some contention and people don't want to definitely take a side, you know how sometimes that happens, I will use an anonymous vote. The trick to a vote is the question to be voted upon must be impartial, right? Yeah. So we take a vote, which is the democratic process. We reach kind of consensus, but we reach majority, and then I move us forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we can get back on focus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Vic and others are recommending an expert consultation to get to the research and create consensus. Sometimes you need a third party. Sometimes the participants are very polarized. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can't make teams across lines very well, too early perhaps in the process for them to get along to do it. I like to cross over lines, over opinions and like that, and put different kinds of people together as a team. Depending, I want to say it depends again on the issue. because you might have experts within your group, and they might need to get together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you could have an expert brought in. Might cost some money, but then again, you might be funded. You might also find an expert online nowadays. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is, well, you might even consult with an expert online. You don't have to actually bring them physically in, right? Yeah. It's cheaper that way. So you might need an expert, a third-party expert, to help perhaps give a direction. Mm-hmm. To dissolve an impasse, people are saying that too. Yeah. So an expert consultation. Mm-hmm. Sitar and others are saying not only an expert, but you might want to look at other people's experience and see if they have suggestions or look at their prior efforts, which is easily enough done online nowadays. Mm-hmm. And see how they succeeded in a similar question. Mm-hmm. Yes, Irene and others are going to compare similar issues. Mm-hmm. Social media is often good for this because people blog and talk a lot and kind of have their group effort online for all to see. Now, I must confess, this is awful, but I'm not fond of people doing it on our negotiations because you don't need the whole world chiming in until you want them to. See, I like to control social media and not just have people blog everything that comes into their head or their opinion on what was said before they really think about it. But I do find other people doing that with other groups very interesting. Hey. And it shows, it might show a thought process. It might show how you got to your success, and maybe even more interesting, how you got to your failure. What you did, what they did wrong that caused them to go and implode, for example, or not reach their goal. You see, that's oftentimes just as interesting. Yeah, because it tells us what not to do, which is an interesting point. Well, this was done and it wasn't such a good idea. That's interesting to know, right? Yeah. So that's one of the things I like. One of the things I like the most is to know that. I like to know what people did that caused it not to work. That's always interesting. Right. Yeah. So, failure is an interesting thing, especially if it's not ours, because it leads us to go, well, that direction might not be right, might not be workable. Let's think outside the box and find a better solution. So what else should we do? What's the next step after the creation of the mission statement? What is the practicality of setting action goals, right? Because after we've done the research, after we've decided on our mission, we need action, right? We're not a theoretical group. I mean, there's lots of theoretical groups. They're called think tanks, right? They think deep thoughts. That's nice. And I don't know if thinking deep thoughts is an effective way of anything, and I suppose it is. They think theories about governments and things. But we're a practical group. We want to actually have action. We want something accomplished. We want a successful outcome. So we've got our process. We've got our mission. We figured out how to get to it. Now that we've thought about it, now that we've done the research, now that we've called in the expert, now that we've got our goals, what do we need to have action? We need action goals to set it into motion, to really do it, right? Yeah. So how do we get our action goals? How do we set them? How the topic is setting goals. How do we set our action goals? Mm-hmm. This is a good point that Nong and others are making. Nong says to visualize the steps needed. Visualize. Kind of think ahead and plan it and think about it in your mind, which is what visualize really is. Yeah. People are saying sit down and have a think. Yeah. That's kind of, I suppose, an Americanism, but you understand what it means. This is a global show. It means visualize it, think about it. If this is our goal, if this is what we're going to do, what do we need to do now? Let's think about this. What do we need to do? How do we need to proceed? Visualize it. Yeah. What do we need? Yeah, very good point to visualize the goal. Visualize the steps, not so much the goal, but what needs to be done next. Visualize the action goals. Jocelyn and others are saying that you only have to visualize the goal. You have to have agreement as to the next step. Anthony says, listen and decide as a group. Listen and decide as a group. It's a very good point. We all need to visualize what the next step is, to think about it, to move on. And then when we get there, we go on to the next one. It's the process, right? Agreement as to the next step. Yeah, we have to be kind of in consensus in order to go forward, right? Not maybe in total agreement, which is hard with human beings, but an agreement as to what we should do next. Listen and decide as a group. Yeah, let's all think about this. Let's all talk about it. Let's decide where it is, who needs to do what. Yeah. Listen and decide as a group. So, we've now decided how to proceed to setting our goal. But sometimes we can decide, right? But something impedes reaching the goal. We've decided what to do, and we're heading there, but we hit a stop. Something is keeping us from reaching our goals. Excuse me. And we do know what they are. So what impedes reaching the goals? So what should we do about them? Yeah, because we're practical. Lal and others, but I think this is the number one choice, and thank you for all of your participation. Yay. Says that what impedes reaching the goals the most is economics, the lack of funds or resources. Lack of funds or resources impedes us. We don't have the money for it. We don't have the budget. We need to spend something that we don't have. So what should we do about that? Well, fundraise, good point. Sometimes the lack of economics kind of hits suddenly. We got a grant, and now it's not going to be renewed, and we depended on it, for example. So fundraising may be a small amount from a bunch of different sources. Yeah, people are saying pass the hat. That may be, yeah, that's kind of an Americanism, and this is a global show. It means amongst the group members, ask them each to donate a certain amount. I've seen it. It depends really how much. That's the truth. It depends what for. And it depends how permanent that's going to be or if people get paid back, right? It's just temporary setback, temporary delay in some sort of funding source that we depended on. Constantly passing the hat's a good way to lose your group. Pardon me. Unless the passing of the hat is for a treat or something, you know, kind of we're going to go celebrate that we hit this milestone. Everybody throw in $20 and we will get food in. We'll order pizzas and stuff. So that's a different kind of pass the hat. That's a small amount for a celebration. Is easy to do, but I like to have a way to bring in what's needed, a fundraiser perhaps, grant writing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes you do need to temporarily pass the hat if you need a professional grant writer. There is such a thing in the United States. I imagine there is other places too. Grants are very big here. Not necessarily big in money, but there's a lot of places that give grants that are charitable in nature. And the application is an art, really is. And there are professionals that do grant writing, that they do nothing but. They will put your need into the proper form so that it is hopefully accepted for money, but definitely accepted for consideration, right? Yeah. So that's lack of funds and resources. The fundraising, oftentimes people have a party, an auction or something for fundraising. Mm-hmm. And now, yes, the internet, yay team, a whole bunch of little donations that add up. How about crowdfunding? Mm-hmm. You've got a good cause. And, really? People are saying that just like there are expert grant writers, there are expert crowdfunding writers so that your, I'm going to call it a plea because it really is. Your promotion is what it would be called, I suppose, is appealing. So, yes, you might need a professional crowdfunding writer person. Hmm. Professionals show up at all times, don't they? Hmm? So what else impedes reaching our goals besides economics? Mm-hmm. Shafir and others are saying participant unreasonableness because there's hostility, and a lot of people are putting in the word civility rules. Yeah. We talk about the civility rules all the time. They are really to prevent participant unreasonableness and hostility. What are the civility rules? They're very, very basic. I do not write them down. I know a lot of you do. The reason I don't write them down is because I make them up as I go along if someone becomes uncivil. But if you can't be rude, you can't be loud, you can't be bullying. Everybody gets their speaking time. Everybody gets their turn. Yeah. Basic civility rules that keep people from getting unreasonable and keep the hostility down. Right? Yeah. I actually explain that we have civility rules up front, first time we meet. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the explanation is unnecessary. I do it anyway, but I do it in kind of a lighthearted manner if I know it's really basically unnecessary. But you know, even the most in accord consensus group, sometimes they get hot, they get heated up, right? And the civility rules, I take them very seriously and I make the participants do so too. Yeah. Unreasonableness and hostility. Mm-mm. That's why we have civility rules. Sharu says that oftentimes what causes an impediment to the goals and what impedes the reaching the goal is that the goal is too broad. Mm-hmm. And that you need to create stages. You have to do it piece by piece. That happens. The goal is too broad, at least it's too broadly stated. A lot of times we have an outcome in mind, and we don't know how to get there, and so we overstate the goal. It's too big, and it scares participants away, for one thing. So we might indeed need to take it step by step, like rotary and country by country. Eradicate polio from the face of the earth. Wow. Eradicate polio from Romania. More able to get your head wrapped around that one, right? And then you branch into all the surrounding countries. So that's a country-by-country, step-by-step goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's a good point. Cheryl and others are saying that if the goal is too broad, then enthusiasm will dissipate because you're not going to, you're attacking it too everywhere. You've got to do it step by step, stage by stage. You can't just kind of run around and hit everything. You've got to focus and start somewhere, complete it, start somewhere, complete it, start somewhere, complete it, step by step in the process. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to call this next group, and thank you all for all of your participation. We've got quite a few people talking about outside influences that impede setting the goals and reaching them. Mm-hmm. It impede our goals, outside influences. Mm-hmm. For example, a respected leader has taken the opposite stand. Mm-hmm. Outside influence, somebody that, or at least some of the participants respect, and generally follow, mm-hmm. because they think they're good, they think they're right, because they're their leader, right? Somebody respected outside of the group in the community has come out in disapproval of what the what we would consider to be a successful outcome. They've taken the opposite side. What should we do about that? Well, we need to talk about it. We need to talk about why we think that that happened. Mm-hmm. We need to talk about whether or not that is right. Because sometimes someone that you respect and even love has an opinion that you don't agree with. Mm-hmm. You really don't. Mm-hmm. We might, if we decide, if we understand that the leader has just come out that way because traditionally that's how it's always been done, for example, but they haven't taken into account some sort of new variable that's occurred. After all, the world changes. And what your people did, what your forebearers did, 300 years ago, is not what should be done now. The world has changed. And the world changes really more swiftly now because of really technology more than anything else. Yeah. So outside influence, you might approach the person who is the respected leader and have them come, talk to him or her, and see why and whether or not their opinion can be altered. Because they're probably perfectly reasonable people. It's just that they didn't consider the alternative and how beneficial it is. Depending, of course, on what it is you're doing. Yeah, but that might be possible. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about cultural tradition with the respected leader. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes you can show, and assuming, of course, that the leader is going to be reasonable, sometimes you can show that culture and tradition are not being trampled. The leader is not in danger of losing stature. I won't say power so much, but stature. They're not endangered because there's a reason why this is in step with what the culture and tradition is. See, you can show that we're not against, we are complementary. We are just walking to the side and not over, you see? Hmm? Yeah, a lot of times that works. You have to reason with them, yeah. But somebody needs to make the effort. Somebody who has access, somebody who the leader also respects would be nice, yes, yes. The threat, people are talking about the threat of ostracism. Threat of being thrown out of your group because you've gone against the culture and the tradition and the respected leader, being ostracized, being expelled. Those are very serious threats if you're if the participant is someone who really wants to stay in the group and they just have a different opinion, but it doesn't mean that they're leaving. It doesn't mean that they want to be unable to be a member of the group anymore. Mm-hmm. You need to approach the people who are in charge of that, the group, yeah, and try to reason with them. It's a good point. A lot of people are saying that you might have to meet in secret. I'm not tremendously fond of that as an option. Sometimes the person, the participant who is being really personally threatened and can't come anymore, instead of saying, well, you're stupid and how come you don't want to come and like that, you could perhaps make them like a consultant to the group and not really a member, right? So you could ask their opinion, maybe. Mm-hmm. See if they know somebody you can approach and like that. So there's different ways of handling this. You don't have to say, well, you have to sit here and be in the group and get ostracized, or we don't think that you're not a member of our group anymore. Well, gee, that's kind of a biggie. I mean, that's a life changer. You don't be ostracized because of something. You want to remain in your group. That's where your family is. So you could indeed not be a member of the group, but perhaps be the expert that is consulted sometimes, perhaps by the leader and not by the group itself, and then the opinion is relayed. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Remember that an expert does not have to be somebody who has a degree in something. It's someone who has insight, personal knowledge and experience, right? Right, yeah. So I'm very cognizant of the fact that sometimes people can't be members of the group outright. They'll really get in trouble. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am, oh, okay. We've got quite a few people. Thank you for your participation. I'm not real big on secret members. I'm not real big on meeting in secrecy if you can possibly help it. Now, I know that some of you are in countries where you really need to do such a thing. And I'd like to say I understand, but I don't fully, of course, because I haven't had to. Mm-hmm. Even if a group is trying to make some sort of a change in the law, it is not illegal in the United States for us to discuss making that change. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll use marijuana legalization as an example. Marijuana is an illegal substance according to federal law in the United States. Federal law is the highest. It's the one that permeates all, it's above all of the laws. But people wanted to legalize it, first of all, for medicinal purposes. It's very pain-soothing and sleep-inducing and like that. And so there were lots of meetings and rallies and stuff held to get that legalized. A lot of states have allowed medical marijuana, and they're first getting into recreational. But so it wasn't illegal to plan that and to get it on the ballot, and you know what I mean. There was a lot of work involved. If you are in a place where you must meet in secret if you're trying to change the laws, I'm really sorry. And it's been my experience with secrecy, especially in the media age, that secrecy is hard to maintain. So be real careful about that and try not to make it your first choice to meet in secret. Because, wow, my experience has been that secrecy doesn't work, I guess, is what it is. human beings what they are. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the media, we have a lot of people using outside influences from the media. Mm-hmm. Mostly social media, but also traditional media, which is still fairly strong and still fairly influential. I mean, there's still newscasts and newspapers and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But social media also, outside influence. Celebrity endorsement, good point. That would be a respected leader who is not a cultural tradition exactly, but somebody that you respect the opinion of, that you would like to emulate. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, these are all outside influences that need to be brought into the open, that we need to be able to talk about. Mm-hmm. So what can we do as leaders to encourage success in our goal setting? I'm going to get to that stage in this conversation because, quite frankly, we're running out of time again. And I apologize to those of you who really like the recipes. I know we have such good conversations that we don't quite get to the recipes for weeks on end because this show goes on every week. And I really apologize, but it's so important and so interesting to have the discussion. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so next time we will try to get to the recipe. I'm really sorry about that. We hardly ever make it anymore, which is good, really. Yeah, people are saying it's really good because the recipes are interesting, but the conversation's more helpful. Mm-hmm. So how do we as leaders encourage success in our goal setting? Mm-hmm. Stephen and others are saying by being good examples, especially good examples of the civility rules, right? If we lose our temper or take a side, well, we have breached the civility rules. Remember, the rules apply to us, too. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is such a lovely sentence. Uma says, listen with understanding and facilitate solutions. How do we as leaders encourage success in the goal setting? Listen with understanding and facilitate solutions. That's really our job, isn't it? To facilitate solutions. Facilitate reaching consensus. Facilitate going forward to reach our goals. Mm-hmm. Brooke and others are saying you need to know when to seek expert assistance. You'll know when you really need a third party or some sort of research to tell you what the next step should be. And I always look to successes and failures of others in similar situations because it's so instructive. And if you can find the leader that either had the success or the failure, a lot of times they'd be glad to talk to you because they're still interested in the topic. And you've got a different angle to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they'd be glad to help. They'd be glad. They don't have to come. They'd be glad to Skype or conference call or something. Yeah. A lot of times you can actually, if it's a modern person, you know what I mean, you can find them and they will be glad to steer you in the right direction because they're still interested. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that would be seeking expert assistance of the best kind, the most interesting kind, because they'll give you insights that's not in the research that you did, mm-hmm. or at least explain it to you better. Mm-hmm. And we are, oh my, we're out of time. Thank you all. And then we didn't get to the recipes, but it was a wonderful discussion. Thank you all for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, is that three W's or four W's? You know what I mean. recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.